Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm Ben Hunter. I'm here with the ever well-read Sarah McDewling.
Oh, wow.
And we are delighted to be sitting across from both Australia and the UK's number one best-selling author, Michael Mosley.
Woohoo!
Dr. Michael Mosley, thanks for coming.
Thank you. Pleasure.
And your new book is The Fast 800. You've been charting nutrition and diet. You've had a series of incredibly well-selling books for many years now. And this book has just surpassed them all in terms of our sales. What is this book and why is it sort of the pinnacle?
Because it's culmination of the other books, I suppose. So there's an evolution. And it sounds a bit boring to say it's an update. It's more than an update. It's kind of coming together of stuff. So the first book was 2013, and that was The Fast Diet, which kind of introduced the world to the idea of the 5-2 diet. And since then, interest in intermittent fasting has just soared.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think that helps. And other books I've written, like Clever Guts, have been about the microbiome. And I've also written one on the 8-week blood sugar diet, which was aimed at people who are pre-diabetic or diabetic. This is kind of a broader thing. Hmm. It's called the Fast 800 because it's about 800 calories. It's fast because it really is fast weight loss, but it's also about intermittent fasting. And as I said, it kind of brings it all together, and I think that's part of the appeal. The people who bought the original 5-2 diet are interested in how has it evolved. The people who were interested in Clever Guts, I suspect, are also kind of interested in the impact that this diet has on the guts. So you never know. You write a book. No one knows anything, do they? When books sell, why they do otherwise. But
well, you seem to have hit the mark.
You know a lot, I'd say.
As you rightly say, the intermittent fasting trend has absolutely exploded. What has been the development in the science behind that since 2014?
Yeah, I'm so sure. What happened as a result of that is that scientists really started piling into it because I think a lot of people bought it. Indeed, a lot of doctors did the diet and did remarkably well on it. But when I wrote the original book, there wasn't that much in the way of human studies, and that has increased enormously. I went to the first ever intermittent fasting conference organized by the University of Southern California just before Christmas. So this was a gathering of about 200 scientists. So, and they said once upon a time you could fit most of the scientists into a taxi. So it's kind of taken off in that way. And people write articles about it. And frankly, it's kind of popular because it works. Because so many people have done it. It doesn't work for everyone. But so many people, when I give talks, come up to talk about it. They're intrigued by it. And as I said, there have been some really big long-term studies done, also here in Australia. The book also introduces a new form of intermittent fasting, which I kind of touched on when I wrote the original book, and it's called time-restricted eating. And the idea is then, this is the number one trend in the US amongst millennials as a form of intermittent fasting. And what they do is you have to constrict the time in which you eat. So it's also known as 16-8 or sometimes known as 14-10 or 12-12.
Oh, okay, so the hours of the day. You're not trying to speed eat.
It's basically
eat as fast as you can.
Actually not. No, it's essentially what you try and do is extend your overnight fast. So, for example, you might stop eating at 8 o'clock at night and then not resume again until 9, 10 or so the next morning. And that gives you a prolonged period without food in your system. And as I said, it got taken up by the millennials, lots of YouTubers, lots of Instagrammers, particularly people who are kind of interested in looking buff. They got interested in it, which was surprising because it was based mainly on rats. And rats, when they look buff, are not that impressive. I was actually involved in the first ever human trial of it, which we did for a series I present on the BBC called Trust Me, I'm a Doctor. And we simply asked a group of people to eat their evening meal an hour and a half earlier and their breakfast an hour and a half later. And that they lost a few kilos. They felt pretty good on it. What was impressive was that they lost a lot of fat. The weight they lost was primarily fat. And as I said, that's kind of become quite a thing in gyms because, again, the few human studies that have been done of this approach show that you can lose fat without losing muscle, which is obviously attractive if you're kind of, you know, into bodybuilding and stuff like that. Mm. So this is a new thing, but what's great about it is you can kind of incorporate it into other forms of intermittent fasting, and it kind of makes it more powerful.
You were telling us something previous to the podcast that has sort of blown my mind, because I know a lot of people who are sort of slaves to their Fitbit and are obsessed with the idea of 10,000 steps a day, and I've just taken that as...
word of God.
Yeah, but apparently not. Would you expand
on
that?
No, absolutely not. the idea of 10,000 steps emerged out of the Tokyo Olympics 1964, and there was a Japanese company who were desperate to sell pedometers. So they basically invented this idea that 10,000 steps was incredibly good for you, and people have just kind of accepted it ever since. It's kind of a golden figure. It's not really based on any science. And we did a study where we actually got people to either do 10,000 steps or three brisk walks of 10 minutes. And that adds up to about 5,000 steps. And the people doing the brisk walks did much better. And there's another thing which would disturb you if you have one of these Fitbit-type devices. And so block your ears now. But they did a study in the States where what they did is they got 300 people. And they got them to lose about 10 kilos in weight over a period of time. And then they allocated them randomly to either a Fitbit or not a Fitbit. And then they followed them for 2 years. And at the end of that period, one group was substantially slimmer than the other. And it was the group without the Fitbit. Wow. Turned out that if you had one of these measuring devices, what you tended to do was you tended to eat more. But you'd look at your device, you'd go, I've done 10,000 steps, I'll have a muffin. And so actually, it was self-defeating, and it shows you how funny humans are, doesn't it? And that's what I love about science. You have these assumptions, you know, I'm going, I've got it, it's going to tell me what to do. But do humans actually behave that way?
Yes.
The answer is often not. And this is also the problem with rat studies often, is that, you know, you can make rats do things, they're trapped. So you get different changes in rats than you do in humans, which is why you've got to be a bit... careful about it. And indeed, in the Fast 800, I have a section at the back on what constitutes good evidence. Because we have all these sort of, people get very confused by health messages. And they kind of want to know, why are there so many health messages out there? And the reality is, there are good studies and really bad studies. And so in terms of the levels of evidence, the worst sort of evidence is animal studies. They're the weakest. Next up, which might surprise you, is government advice. That is universally regarded as very, very poor evidence. Normally based on out-of-date studies, the people who are on the committees always have their own vested interest, always promote different things. And governments are incredibly reluctant to change anything. So amongst the scientific community, that is just one up on the rat studies, government advice. And then you move to what are called cohort studies. And then you move from there to kind of randomized controlled studies and then to meta-analysis. So it's kind of what you really want to do if you're looking at a good study is you want to know it's got a randomized control study at the heart of it, and ideally several of them, which are kind of being pulled together. So I find I'm very geeky, so I like this stuff. But the one thing I would say if you're going to buy any sort of diet book or an exercise book or anything like that, do kind of flick to the back and see if they've got any scientific references, because there are something like 50,000 diet books out there, and most of them have kind of been invented by a YouTuber on the back of cornflakes packet. So I strongly feel, you know, you should kind of, you want to know where it's come from. You may not want to check all the references, but I've got at least 100 scientific references, and everything I write about is based on, you know, and I spend my life talking to weight loss specialists, exercise specialists, you name it. And as I said, I go to lots of conferences, I get invited to lots of conferences, so I'm very confident. And that's, I think, also part of the appeal. That, you know, when I wrote the original book, I was saying, you know, this is kind of what we know now. But the scientific community kind of embraced it because I was interested in the science.
And this hurrah is for science. You sell yeah. such yes, staggering hurrah. Numbers of books.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So it kind of worked out, didn't it?
Yeah. So 800 calories seems hard to my mind. Like, what would
it's better than 600. So the original book was 600. And that was mainly based on a few human studies and some rat studies. And then what we've seen subsequently is that in some of the 5-2 studies which have been done, and quite a few of them have actually been done here in Australia, people actually tend to go for about 800. And they do very well on that. So I thought you might as well go with what people actually do as opposed to what the scientists ask them to do. And so that's kind of, and 800 had a kind of ring to it. And also, all the kind of big weight loss studies which have been done recently are all kind of around 800. Because rapid weight loss has absolutely come back into the fore. There have been a number of big studies, both in Australia and in the UK and in the States, which have shown the benefits of rapid weight loss. And I know of a couple of big studies which are going to come out soon. Indeed, one of the scientists I met out in California, she said she had set out 4 years ago to prove that rapid weight loss was terrible and ended up proving exactly the opposite. And
that's fascinating, because been hearing so much against, you know, yo-yo dieting or rapid weight loss, as you put it, and professionals trying to encourage us to embrace, you know, long-term habits.
Yes, absolutely endorse the idea of long-term habits.
But how does one make it a long-term habit overnight?
So this is a very specific program. So the idea is you start off with rapid weight loss, because one of the things which I think people are surprised by is in the long-term weight loss studies, where they look at people after 10 years, 15 years, the best single predictor of how much weight they have lost and kept off is the amount of weight they lost in the first month. So weight loss in the first month absolutely predicts long-term weight loss, which is not what you might expect. There's a wonderful article in the New England Journal of Medicine called Facts, Myths, and Presumptions About Weight Loss. It was kind of the world's best weight loss specialist put together to kind of make a list of it, and top of the myth was it is better to lose weight slowly than fast. That all the evidence now is rapid weight loss, if you do it properly, is kind of the way to go. And as I said, three big trials published in 2018, two in the UK, one in the US, that's four, I can't count, and one in Australia, and there are big ones coming down the track as well. So I feel super confident about it. But you have to kind of do it carefully. And as you say, 800 calories doesn't sound a lot, but the surprise is that within a few days, most people adapt. And they find, and they're astonished to discover their hunger kind of passes. And it is obviously incredibly rewarding, because you're seeing this change. And again, one of the biggest problems with slow and steady weight loss is people get discouraged.
Rate of distracted. Progress is slow.
Exactly. But you were asking me about how do you then keep up. And so the program is very much about you start with rapid weight loss, you move over to a kind of 5-2 approach, and then you move over to the sort of sustainable bit, which is, broadly speaking, a kind of Mediterranean diet. But one of the things that will have happened in the course of doing that, hopefully, is that you will have kind of learnt new ways of cooking, lots of menus in the book, lots of recipes. So you will have found new ways of eating food. And the French have a saying, hunger is the best sauce. So when you're a bit hungry at the beginning and you're trying those new foods, then if they satiate your appetite, then when you feel hungry next time, you might start reaching for some of those veggies and things like that. Because we all know what we should do. And this book is all about how do you make that happen.
Yes.
It's kind of like we all know that we should move more and eat less. But that's kind of like going to a football coach and saying, how do I win? And they go, well, just score more goals on the other side. It's true, but completely useless.
Yeah.
Utterly, utterly useless as a kind of way of guiding you. So this book is very, very detailed in that sense. It's about how you guide people through it. And I kind of provide you as many tools as possible to kind of get you there and then to keep you there. And so that's really what it's about. And I also have a kind of website, which is thefast800.com, which I, you know, it also has an online program. Because
is that where you can find recipes and things?
Yeah, absolutely. And you can kind of build on it. You can get professional support. I developed it with a bunch of Australian doctors, and we've been kind of working on it for 2 years. So I'm kind of, we've been testing it out, because a lot of people can kind of do it with a book. But the great thing about an online community is you get a lot more support. And sometimes you need stuff. And I think kind of this is where the future lies. Well, frankly, the present still lies. It's kind of the bringing together of books and online and communities and groups and stuff like that. You can kind of, it's a magical combination. And I found it really rewarding because you also get feedback, and that kind of helps shape the next kind of thing you write. So I've been embracing online for some time now.
I think there's a lot in that, because you did get support from the community and you have accountability from the community. It's more than just having the knowledge in your head. It's having
And it's also the moments of weakness and the terrible, you know, when things have gone wrong, and you can reach out to groups of people who've been through it. And in my experience, people who have, you know, they've had type 2 diabetes and no longer have it. They were infertile because they had polycystic ovary syndrome, which is the result largely of being overweight or obese or things like that. And they have effectively cured themselves by, you know, following the advice I give, and then they want to share it with other people. They're positively evangelical about it. I mean, I was in New Zealand recently, and this woman came down from the North Island. She'd travelled to the bookshop just to want to talk to me and say, and to talk to, she wanted to talk to anybody, and she wanted to tell them about the changes that occurred. This is not really about, in the end, just about weight loss. It's about health transformation, because what I'm talking about is things like raised blood sugars, type 2 diabetes, and I urge you at the beginning to kind of work out what is the thing, what is it you want? You know, it's a bit like the yellow brick road. You know, do you want the heart, do you want the brain, do you want the bravery? What is it that you actually want out of this thing? And then you can kind of tailor it for yourself. And you've got to kind of, because the more specific you are and the more detailed you are, the better. So I want to reverse my diabetes. I want to get pregnant. I want to improve the pain in my knees. I don't want to become demented, whatever it might be. It's kind of, you write it down and you're very detailed about it. Because being overweight, being obese and things like that is not in the end, I think, about aesthetics. It's about the fact that you're going to have to live with this for a longer period. It's the new smoking, in the sense that, you know, except it's worse. Because the thing about smoking is, you know, you smoke a lot and you drop dead fairly fast. You get a heart attack, you get lung cancer, whatever. With things like type 2 diabetes and dementia, you don't. You go on living pretty long, long time. But you go on living in ill health for a very long time. Sorry. There I am, health, having a good old hack. So I'm kind of passionate about it because, you know, we see it all around us. And I'm also, when I talk to weight loss specialists, they also go, there's this sort of apocalyptic view, which is, you know, diets don't work. It's just not true. Bad diets don't work. Good diets work, and they work really well. But it's how you kind of get people to see that and to do it is kind of where they're at. And, you know, government spend and doctors spend a fortune on treating patients with raised blood pressure, diabetes, or whatever it might be. And yet there is this thing which really, really does work, and which would mean that you don't have to do all the other stuff. And what I'm pleased about is that in the UK, doctors and even the government are beginning to embrace it. So, for example, the idea of 800 calories, which you say sounds a bit crazy, done for, say, 12 weeks. Now, that was the basis of the 8-week blood sugar diet, and is kind of the basis of the Fast 800. Well, the UK government announced just before I came out here, they're going to roll out a program for 5,000 people doing this, 800 calories a day for 12 weeks. So it has moved from being it's bonkers to being it's absolutely mainstream. And the NHS, National Health Service in the UK, who originally labelled the 5-2 as a fad diet, now say actually it's in many ways a better option if you want to lose weight, particularly gut fat, and you want to reduce your insulin levels and things like that. So the world moves.
Yeah.
And that's really, really encouraging. And that's why I love about books. With books, you can change the world. Really, honestly, you can inform people, you can change. And that's brilliant. Like, almost more than any other type of medium. Mm. Still, in the modern world, a book has not gone away. Agreed. And I'm delighted by that.
Yeah, so are we.
And, and so now you've got this incredibly successful new title. What is next in your...
I'm actually thinking about... Well, I know what I'm going to write about, but I'm not going to tell you now.
Okay.
I know exactly what it's going to be.
What a
tease. Exactly. It's not about... It's not going to be about that. It's going to be about something else which is of profound importance to us and which is profoundly measurable. Because the stuff I like doing is stuff which is measurable. Somebody once asked me to write a book about kind of the brain and the dementia and things like that. But the reality is you need a sort of 30-year study and, you know, it's not my thing. I do, obviously, in the Fast 800, I do write about the impact on the brain. And there is a fantastic big study, which is going to be published later this summer, out of National Institutes on Aging. It's the biggest and longest study done on the 5-2 on the brain. And the prof behind it, he can't tell me the detail, but he says it's going to knock your socks off.
Positive.
Wow. Yeah.
So that will be a kind of another great thing.
Fantastic. Well, I'm exhausted. That was brilliant.
That was actually amazing. And I really want to thank you for this analogy of the sport analogy. Yeah. So I'm going to trot that out. Next time someone says to me, oh, weight loss, it's just maths. It's just about, you know, like move more and eat less. I'm going to say exactly that to them because I think it's such a good point.
Mm.
It's one thing to know what the science is behind it. It's another thing to know how to approach it and how to achieve
it. Absolutely. I mean, it's like you wouldn't, if you go to a tennis coach and they just said, you know, just hit the ball really accurately into the corner and win lots of points.
You're like, right,
okay. Yeah, thank you very much. That's pretty helpful. It's not a guide to anything, is it? It's just kind of a smug way of putting people down. That really irritates me. There are things that really irritate me. That's one of them. The other is it's easy. It's not easy. It's really, really hard. And the other one is starvation mode, which is just complete and utter nonsense and gets trotted out all the time. Utter nonsense. So I'm very much into myth busting. And as I said, it's not kind of something I just invent. It's based on long conversations with lots of the world's leading weight loss specialists who, again, tear their hair out about all these sort of strange conceits which are out there and which refuse to die despite huge amounts of evidence to the contrary.
Dr. Michael Mosley, thank you very much for spending some time with us today. I know you've got lots of myths to go and bust and lots of people to go and talk to, so thank you for spending some time with us.
Lovely, thanks.
And you can buy the Fast 800 Diet and all of Michael's other books from booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.